from motion theoretical physics ideas. And I would like to thank the organizers, in particular Sabine Hossenfelder, for the kind, her kind invitation to come here, and actually for the honor to be the first speaker. I guess that makes my life easier, because for the rest of the week I can relax and attend and concentrate on the rest of the talks. What I'm going to talk today is about one aspect of quantum gravity. Well, actually, we don't know anything what the theory looks like, so this aspect may, of course, not be true. But precisely because we don't know what the theory is about, all possibilities could be open. So what I'm going to talk about is some possible models which suffer, if you like, from effective theory models, which suffer from decoherence as a result of quantum gravity interactions. Now, this sort of models, it's interesting in that they predict some sort of experimental signatures which may be uniquely attached to them. So in other words, this is what I would call smoking gun evidence, because unfortunately for most of the effects of quantum gravity, the signals may not be unique. Okay, I mean, one of the most profound ones, if quantum gravity is a medium, the ones on modified dispersion relations, I don't think this is a unique test, because there may be hundreds of theories which could predict modified dispersion relations. And therefore, of course, if you see something, which at the moment you don't have any evidence for that, but there are searches, if you see something, then you wouldn't know necessarily to which model you should attach it. And you, sometimes it's even difficult to disentangle modified dispersion relations due to gravity from other more conventional sources. However, what I'm going to talk about is if you see a CPT violation, especially in the form of decoherence, as I will argue, then at least you could say that this is a model of quantum gravity, for reasons that I will try to explain. There's a particular effect, which I call the omega effect, which could be a signature of quantum gravity if it is there. So the outline of my talk is the following. Is there any laser pointer or otherwise? Oh, there is a stick. Great. Thanks. So you have to be careful with your questions, all right? And comments. So the briefly, I will review simply reasons for having CPT violations in quantum gravity. This is the aspect that I'm going to concentrate on. It is not necessarily that you would have a CPT violation, as I will discuss, but that's the point of view I'm taking, that I'm trying to test CPT violation, which is due to quantum gravity interaction. So in order to have CPT violation, you may have Lorentz violation, of course, which could be microscopic and or cosmological. I will discuss this briefly, but I would like to stress here that in models that you have CPT violation, you don't necessarily, in models that you have Lorentz violation, you do not necessarily have CPT violation. Okay, this is an often some misconception that people think that once you arrive at Lorentz violating models, then necessarily automatically you will have CPT. That's not true. I will see. Second is what I will call quantum gravity foam. In other words, the fact that the vacuum of quantum gravity might consist of microscopic fluctuations, which could lead to some sort of foamy structure of the space-time at sub-Planckian scales. When I mean Planck, I don't necessarily mean these days 10 to the 19 GeV. I mean the scale where the effective gravity interactions enter, because in view of many models, this may not necessarily be 10 to the 19 GeV. It could be higher or lower. So this is the second reason for where CPT could be induced, and this is actually what I'm going to concentrate mostly in this talk. As I will discuss, I will try to describe some microscopic models, because I would like to make some concrete estimates of this effect, concrete estimates can only be made within concrete models which are governed by certain assumptions. And I will try to make what assumptions I made, how difficult the assumptions are to be realized, and I will, as I was instructed by reading the instructions of the description of the workshop, we are all here in order to understand better what assumptions underline various models, and that's what I will hope I will try to do. I will concentrate on one aspect of non-critical strings, which I have worked on. This is not the only one, and I don't want to advocate here that strings is a successful theory of quantum gravity. I mean, it's undoubtedly successful as a consistent model, but it's one of them. There are many others, as I will discuss later on, which you could have this effect. So then what is the unique effect I'm talking about, which is associated with the coherence, is essentially a modification of the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen correlation in entangled states of meson factories. So you have a phi meson or a y meson. It decays into, on the left and on the right hand side of a detector. It produces K0 and K0 bar, or B0 and B0 bar, depending on which factory you're talking about, phi or B meson factory. And then, why is it an EPR measurement? Because you measure at a certain time the decay products of one of the mass eigenstates, of the, one of the mass eigenstates, the K short or K long, for instance. And by measuring the products of the decay on one side of the detector, you infer what are the products of the decay on the other side. And this is why you call it EPR correlation. It's not a violation of special relativity, and no information is transferred by one side on the other. There is no paradox. It's simply that you have your, in the back of your mind, your theory. You essentially assume a well-defined CPT quantum mechanical operator, not necessarily a conserved CPT, a well-defined quantum mechanical operator, and that's how you are able to say that if on the left-hand side I have, let's say, products K long, K short, on the right-hand side I should have also K long, K short. As we shall see, if CPT operator if quantum gravity form exists, the effective theory of CPT operator may not be well-defined. This is the theorem due to Robert Wald in 1980. Because you have evolution of pure states to mixed in the effective theory. And precisely, this sort if you like, CPT ill definition as a quantum mechanical operator leads to the effect that in addition to the KL, K short, or K short, K long states that you were supposed to see on the left and on the right hand side of the detector, you see also contamination by K short, K short, K long states, as I will discuss. And if you see this, there are ways of disentangling this from any other backgrounds that could produce the same effect. And that's why I will say this is a unique effect of this space-time form situation. If it is there, this is not generic in models, and this is what I will try to discuss today. So some generic issues, which you all know, so I will not spend time. Of course, CPT could be, there are three assumptions of CPT violation. And this is Lorentz invariance, locality of interactions, and unitarity, which is a theorem proven by many people, notably by John Bell, Luders, and Yost put it in an axiomatic field theory. And recently, Greenberg has demonstrated that the CPT follows by Lorentz covariant properties of off-cell correlation functions, Weismann functions, if you like. So Lorentz invariance plays a role in CPT violation, but as we shall see, if Lorentz invariance is violated, it does not necessarily imply CPT violation. Why we should have a CPT violation, as I said, if any of these three assumptions is violated, in general, the theorem is not valid. Moreover, the theorem has only been proven for flat space times, of course. And that's why Lorentz invariance comes in. Of course, you believe that in general relativity, locally, the space time can always be made flat. So this is a local theory, so Lorentz invariance is locally valid, and therefore the theorem should be valid. But of course, if local Lorentz invariance is not valid, as for instance, we might have a situation we might encounter in the case where there are microscopic black holes, so locally you cannot find a regular transformation that makes the spacetime flat, then the theorem may be in danger. In fact, the theorem in highly curved spacetimes, as Wald has pointed out, it is violated in the sense that the operator is not well defined in the effective theory. We don't know what the full quantum gravity theory is, or indeed the full quantum gravity may be characterized by some sort of CPT invariance. People in M theory, they try to postulate what M theory, which is the theory, an enveloping theory of strings, they try to postulate that CPT exists. But then I would like to tell me what is the M theory, so then I could believe the proof, because it's not clear. And as I will try to present, there are some models of strings which are not critical, of course, in which CPT is not well defined. Another reason for violating CPT is, of course, what I said, a standard model extension by Kostalevsky and collaborators, where Lorentz invariance is violated, but that's not necessarily imply a CPT transformation. However, this CPT breaking in Lorentz case is different from that of decoherence in the sense that the CPT operator is well-defined and simply does not commute with the Hamiltonian of the system. This is what we are accustomed to. We are accustomed to only Hamiltonian formalism in order to do phenomenology. If, however, you have decoherence, the Hamiltonian part of your system is only the effective low energy part. Usually, you have to know the entire Hamiltonian of the full system, but then sometimes the degrees of freedom from the environment are inaccessible in principle to the local experimentalist who is measuring using only scattering states. So the scattering matrix may not be well defined. The perturbative scattering matrix may not be well defined all the time. And in this sense, the CPT as an effective operator is not well defined for the effective theory, and that's why you have this break. So these two are essentially different, and the omega effect which pertains to that, i.e. the modification in the EPR correlations, will be actually a distinguishing feature between a Lorentz violating CPT, a CPT violation due to Lorentz symmetry violation from that to those decoherence. Finally, the third category is loop quantum gravity backgrounds, which is a space-time background independent theory. And actually, I should put this in two categories because loop quantum gravity may probably sometimes is not necessarily implying the form of dispersion relation, so it's a different category. For loop quantum gravity, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert, so I don't know what is the status of the quantum theory of CPT. If you have a Lorentz-violating state, as for instance was suggested by Gambini and Poulin as far as the Weavy state is concerned, if you have that, and if that state is rigorously defined, I'm not an expert here, then you could have a CPT violation in the sense of a modified dispersion relation. And in the, but as I said, necessary, it doesn't mean, if you have a modified dispersion relation, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have CPT violation. So you have to be careful here. I mean, you may have Lorentz violating models which lead to modified dispersion relations, but the CPT is well defined. So I don't know what the quantum, whether the quantum version of at least theories with deformed special relativities is fully developed so as to arrive at the rigorous statement about CPT. So the situation here is open and quite exciting to do research, if you like. The same happens, of course, for string theory. Yes?
Correlation and curve space-time, I think, is a little bit better than you indicate there, because Stefan Hollands, who was one of Wall's graduate students in 1995, proved a version of curve space quantum field theory, which I think the CPT theorem he proved works certainly in the absence of horizons.
Yes. I will come to that. In fact, is what I will call CPT invariance without CPT invariance. There is a weak form thing. I mean, yes. As I said, however, I will also indicate another specific model where the effect, it also my model doesn't have horizons, but it has a form. So let me, thanks very much for Matt here for his comment. What I mean by form, I don't necessarily mean formation of microscopic horizons. You might have defects in space-time. For instance, you have a brain in string theory, and you have deep particles, you have point-like brains in the bulk, and as the brain moves, deep particles, that is what the model I will describe, the particles cross your brain, all right? Brain with A, because the particles may cross your brain with AI, but that's a different issue. So they cross the brain, and as, of course, the brain moves and the particles cross your world, from the point of view of an observer on the low-energy world, this will appear effectively as flashing on and off microscopic defects. But actually, these are classical objects from the higher dimensional space-time. In this case, this is where you will see that the interaction of matter on the brain with the defects creates a Lorentz-violating vector as a result of their momentum direction of the particle. It violates CPT in this sense, but there are no microscopic horizons. So thank you for this comment. In fact, I will discuss this point. Nothing is certain, as I said. I mean, from what I'm going to, unfortunately, in quantum gravity, nothing is certain. So there is no, if you like, figure of merit, a single figure of merit to tell you that that is a unique model. So it's not a situation like you built an LHC and you know more or less what you expect. It's unfortunately, and you should be prepared for many things. So this is, I stole it from Kostalevsky. This is a wonderful Dalí-type expression of microscopic time irreversibility. What I would call CPT is actually a microscopic time irreversibility. it's an arrow of time, it's a microscopic arrow of time, it's not necessarily related to charge conjugation and parity properties. So if you have a time reversal which is or not of the same magnitude as CP, then that creates an arrow of time. And of course, it would be nice if you have a CPD violation, then you would understand why essentially particles grow all. Particles, not us, because microscopic bodies always have an arrow of time as a result of interaction with the environment. The point is that if you have a non-standard space-time, for instance, what Kostelecki advocated, a Lorentz vector, globally or locally, pointing in a given direction in space, then of course, you might have a CPD violation. The same as if you have the space-time form with microscopic horizons, which John Archibald Wheeler has postulated many years ago. And as I will discuss in due course, Wald has formulated a theorem in which, you know, in the CPD is broken in the strong form, but you may indeed have a weak, if you like, CPD invariance if the horizons are not there. Now, the detecting CPD violation, a brief transparency before I go on, is actually not an easy task. I listed here all possible phenomenologies that you should do. There is no single figure of merit. Apart from this test of the omega effect in entangled meson states, you could have other complementary tests of CPD, decays of charged mesons, anti-hydrogen spectroscopic measurements, for instance, where you measure property between hydrogen and anti-hydrogen, and therefore you compare the two. You can have low-energy atomic physics experiments, which give extreme precision tests of Lorentz symmetry. Ultra-cold neutrons, that's a very interesting experimental phenomenon, because recently people managed to demonstrate that if you have a PV energy, very low energy called the neutrons, then they can see the classical gravity effect on the trajectory of the neutron. And of course, ultra-cold neutrons could have something to say about CPD tests. Neutrinos are the most sensitive probes at the moment. And of course, you have all sorts of terrestrial and extraterrestrial tests of Lorentz invariance, especially looking for modified dispersion relations from active galactic nuclei, flares, and whatever. As far as the flares are concerned, I am particularly annoyed, if you permit me the word, by the scientific press, which gave more importance to magic experiments than actually what the magic people themselves did. There was a paper in the magic recently which got, if you like, a publicity in the scientific press, claiming that this is a first observation of quantum gravity signals, and we never said, neither the magic collaborators said anything on this. What it was an improvement by three orders of magnitude of another limit. They have seen a signal, of course, they have seen a signal, which if true, and if you manage to disentangle it from source effects, which to me is by one flare you cannot do it, as I said, then it would be an important thing. But I stress again, if you see a modified dispersion relation, which would be expressed as a delay of the arrival time of photons, it doesn't probably mean that you are it's a quantum gravity necessarily, it's not a signal necessarily of quantum gravity. Even if it is, you wouldn't know what theory it is, all right, from. I mean, because there are hundreds of the dispersion relations, which are hundreds of models which modify the dispersion relations, with modified dispersion relations, and there is no unique test. But of course, if you see it and you are convinced that it's not a source effect, then it's a very big thing. But the important point, what I want you to know is that the important point to me of the physics of measuring G of B and flare lies on the detectors, lies on Cherenkov detectors rather than their observation. This is the nice physics and the analysis they do and how the sensitivity is arriving to what they call Planck sensitivity. And that's another point that I want, since this is the first talk, I want to stress. What do we mean by sensitivity in quantum gravity? It depends on the model, right? I mean, simply arriving at the number which says 10 to the 19 or 10 to the 17 GV doesn't mean anything. You may have a modified dispersion relation which goes with the cubic power of Planck mass. Then your experiment has zero sensitivity to that, right? If the model predicts a linear dispersion relation, 1 over M Planck, which one of these models with the particles can do, if you like, then yes. So it's when you're talking about sensitivity to quantum gravity, remember, there's no single figure of merit. It depends on the model. But all these tests are worthy of pursuing because precisely shows more and more, if you like, that you get, there are more and more precision measurements. And of course, unexpected phenomena could occur. So This is what I've said about sensitivity. There are models which are suppressed by at least a quadratic Planck mass, others which are linear. The things will be linear if gravity is universal, then are already excluded by the synchrotron radiation test of what Liberati, Jacobson, and Mattingly have. In other words, a linear modified special relation for electrons is ruled out by the synchrotron radiation. Again, quadratic, they are approaching to that. However, a linear provided that the coefficient is of order one. There are models with linear dispersion relations, as I will discuss later on, which A, pertain only to photons, and charged particles are protected against this by gauge symmetry charge conservation. Therefore, these sort of models cannot be ruled out by the synchrotron radiation because they pertain to photons, but their coefficient in front is not even of order one. Could even be smaller because it pertains to how many defects you reach in space. So it could be you could only reach a very suppressed number. So you may have a linearly suppressed relation, but the probability of interaction, which essentially comes up as a coefficient in front of the linearly suppressed modified special relation, might be very small. So that shows how difficult the text is. So enough for introduction. Now let me go on to compare the two major categories of CPT violation, the one which could be arising from Lorentz symmetry and which is simply a well-defined quantum mechanical operator which simply does not commute with the Hamiltonian. And these are all these models that lead to modified dispersion relations or matter antimatter symmetries. The second category is what Wald has indeed postulated. There is a strong form of CPT violation which is associated with the fact that in the effective theory you move from a pure state to a mixed state, which, however, as I will discuss later on, may not even show up in nature because you may, the anomalous term may be canceling among the particle and the particle sectors, or you may not have horizons. But I will present one model in which this effect of a nil definition of CPT operator actually is present, and then if it is present, then there are unique tests, as I will try to argue, on EPR correlations. So this is the concentration of the talk. Another indirect test, which is related to this ill definition of CPT operator, and which probably should ask you, I don't know if he says about this, is the presence of dark energy itself. The presence of dark energy itself in our universe might be related to a CPT violation, and certainly, in my belief, is a phenomenon of quantum gravity. If the dark energy is there, and more or less the observations, I think, they are in agreement there that 74% of the moment consists of dark energy, barring, of course, alternative models with Lorentz violation that I don't want to discuss now. If you accept that the energy budget that both CMB and supernova and baryon oscillation measurements in galactic surveys give us, then this dark energy may, if it is a cosmological constant, then it's bad for CPT because you have an horizon and you cannot define properly asymptotic states. If it is a relaxing to zero, which I believe it is, then there's no problem and then CPT is probably okay. But this is, I wanted to. So a caution, which I mentioned earlier, if you have Lorentz violation, does not necessarily imply violation of CPT. So be careful. If you see CPT violation, then of course it could be Lorentz. But if you have a Lorentz, if you see a modified dispersion relation, don't jump into conclusions that CPT is going to be violated. The reason is can be demonstrated here by two simple examples. The first is the standard model extension of Kostolevsky, which is not a theory but a general parameterization, and which you can see that the terms, all of these terms, the extra terms, violate Lorentz symmetry because they are characterized by vacuum expectation values, constant values of tensorial and vectorial quantities, and of course that violates Lorentz symmetry, but only two of those violate CPT, the ones with the red, A mu and B mu, and not the others. Essentially, the rule is that you violate CPT if you have an uncontracted index in front of your field. Here, there are no uncontracted indices, so that's fine. For instance, and of course, you may not even necessarily have constants A and B because you may have a statistical effect of this could vanish, but only the correlations would not be zero, in which case the Lorentz violation would appear only in quantum correlations. It would be much more suppressed. Another example is the non-commutative field theories. Non-commutative field theories do violate Lorentz because they are characterized by minimum length and the non-commutativity between space, as you see here. For instance, take this simple example where this is depending on or is constant at the symmetric vector, but a tensor. But as you see here, by defining appropriately the non-commutativity through the Moyal product, the effective theory, which you can define it this way, the effective, for instance, QED, if you constrain the model in a QED sector, has terms which appear in the standard model extension, but there are no terms with uncontracted indices so as to have a CPT violating situation. So here, for instance, the only terms that you get from the non-commutative things in the fermion sector is this, and you don't get the others. So that is an example of which Lorentz symmetry is not violated. Here are some limits on the B system. I won't dwell on that. There are also tests on kaons, but that's not what I want to discuss. What I want to discuss next is, of course, what I was saying, whether CPT is not well defined as a result of horizons. One case where we might face an horizon in quantum field theory is globally. Is a global situation if our dark energy is of cosmological constant type. In this sense, eventually you will have an asymptotic horizon because the state will not, so you will not be able to define asymptotic states, and that might imply that CPT is not well defined a la Wald, because then, you know, if you have horizons, in general, you may have evolution of pure states to mixed. In the De Sitter case, in contrast to the black hole, you don't have a clear understanding what the microstate outside the horizon are, unfortunately. And that is one of the main problems. Quantum field theories in the De Sitter space are not, in my opinion, fully understood. String theory has made some interesting progress via a De Sitter conformal field theory correspondence. But again, in my opinion, this is not necessarily understood to perfection at the moment. Yes.
The point that you say, if these cosmological constant, then it is a problem with the cosmological horizon.
I will come, you will see now, after to see in what sense the CPT is not well defined. So, if you have any macroscopic horizon, it could be black hole, or it could be a cosmological thing. Eh? So we are living, the difference from a cosmological case and the black hole is that in the black hole, the observer is outside, far away, but in the cosmology we are living inside here, and the horizon is far away from us. So it's the dual situation. So you have an initial pure state. Some states fall into the horizon. In cosmology, in the cosmological thing, you have the long wavelength states which cross the horizon in the sense that their length is bigger than h to the minus one, which h is the Sitter constant. And in that sense, these states also cross the horizon and might constitute an environment. Although, as I said, we don't know anything about the full quantum version of the Sitter space, and at least we don't understand whether that is perfectly legitimate. However, if you lose states and you have a mixed state, then the observer, the effective observer, has to trace over an observed degrees of freedom, define a mixed state, and then instead of defining an S matrix, you define a superscattering matrix which fails to factorize. So if you like, if you have even in a De Sitter space, the state that the scattering operator that would define the out from the in state fails to factorize to two scattering matrices. That's the idea. Holography might of course change completely this picture, and probably we will hear in the next talk. But there are arguments against and arguments in favor. Arguments in favor is of course that if you have a topologically non-trivial space-time, as now I'm not talking about De Sitter. In De Sitter, you cannot do anything. It's not a quantum thing. De Sitter is you have the horizon there. It's classical, in a sense. I mean, it's there. In microscopic black hole space-times, you may have, you define the path integral of gravity by superimposing trivial and non-trivial topologies. But as shown by Maldacena, essentially by regularizing your theory with a zero cosmological constant with a small negative one, where you know there is a holography due to its convention, and then taking negative cosmological constant to zero, then the trivial topology remains as the time goes away, but the non-trivial one decays away exponentially with time, and this is why Hawking says that you don't lose information. But that doesn't necessarily mean, in my opinion, in opinion to others, that you will not have entanglement entropy, okay? Many people have worked on that. Entanglement entropy means that you might have essentially an horizon or an area below which you have to trace degrees of freedom because they are inaccessible to the experimenters, even if holography is fine. Eh? Holography may be fine, but pertaining to gravitational degrees of freedom that the experimentalist has no way of measuring by local scattering experiment. In this case, you will have an entanglement entropy, and indeed, you could have a situation like this. Also, as I will argue, space-time foam may be due to other defects, not only horizons where you could have holography. You may have these stochastic deep particles, which, as I will argue, under certain circumstances, may create all sorts of problems. So it's worth checking at least this thing. And now let me come to the question why the horizon could create problems. So this would answer also the question that I had earlier. So suppose that's the world's proof. Suppose that you have a well-defined quantum mechanical operator acting on density matrices. Bar indicates the antiparticle operators, if you like. So the ones which are time-reversed because they describe antiparticles. If you have a superscattering operator relating out and in states, assuming, of course, a well-defined operator, which when it acts on density matrices carefully is unitary, because remember, the time reversal is anti-unitary operator. So if you have a state and the small CPT acts on the state, this is anti-unitary. But if you have a density matrix, the theta, which essentially is the product of this operator, this is unitary. So that's what I want you to. So if you have a theta acting on density matrices, it is a unitary operator. So that's the assumption. You assume that you may have a unitary operator. And if you follow simple quantum mechanical steps, you arrive at the fact that rho in is equal to rho in times this operator, assuming the existence of an operator that takes the out state to the in bar and vice versa. This means that this operator should be equivalent to the identity, or that this operator should be the inverse of the superscattering operator. But that is the problem. You can prove rigorously that if you start from a pure state to a mixed one, then, of course, the inverse of the superscattering operator may not exist. Now here, I have to stress that this is an effective theory, decoherence, okay? So in other words, if you take into account pure gravitational states, some of those which may be even non-local, then you may indeed define an operator which is fine, but in that case still the operator on CPT could be ill-defined. But then it's what I was also pointed out earlier by has been pointed out by Wolf himself and subsequently elaborated by other people, that you may have a weak, if you like, invariance of CPT violation in the sense that despite its strong violation, it will not show up in any experiment in nature, okay? Why is that? Simply because you may have what people in decoherence call decoherence-free subspaces. The experimenter may be able of preparing pure states, and then if the probability from an initial pure state to a final one could be CPT invariant. This is the small operator, the one acting on pure state vectors, which is, if you like, has a well-defined inverse. And in this particular case, this means that the dagger of the superscattering operator would be related to this. So if you have this condition, then everything would be fine despite the strong form of CPT invariance. In this particular case, this is well-defined only when it acts on pure states, on a subspace of states. And again, this doesn't have any inverse, otherwise you would have the pure factorizable situation in a full CPT invariant. So this is a condition which might be happening in nature, and the question is whether experimentally you can disentangle the two. The effect on the EPR modification correlations that I was talking about is one of these cases. To understand this weak CBD invariance, Wald put it nicely, and he says supporting evidence could come from black hole thermodynamics, which states essentially that although you have a strong form of CBD, so you don't have white holes, because if CBD invariance holds, you should have also white holes, which acts as a sink of particles under hot irradiation rather than sources. This, nevertheless, the CBD reverse of the most probable way of forming a black hole is actually the most probable way for a black hole will evaporate. So that is, so in other words, if the black hole during its evaporation emits a certain kind of particles, no new particles should collapse so as to form that black hole. So the process is time reversed invariant, and precisely the black hole evaporation should be the CPT reverse. So this is a situation which could characterize quantum gravity, but in this case, the effective space of the experimentalist will be free from decoherence. So we are back on the case where we don't have observable decoherence. So that is one possible case. But what about if you have other situations? For instance, you may have stochastic fluctuations of space-time, those suggested by you and Ford, essentially, and you, which you could also characterize our deep particle states if you have fluctuations of defects in space-time in general. In this particular case, the geodesics of the light cone itself would fluctuate. This means the Lorentz would be violated, and you can show that under certain circumstances in this case, CPT will not be well defined, because if the fluctuations, for instance, are energy dependent, then you can apply the arguments by Greenberg and show that the local Lorentz covariance is not necessarily valid, and therefore you cannot have a CPT violation. So these are stochastic models of foam. Again, of course, if you have a stochastic holographic model of foam, as probably we will hear by Professor Ng later on, then CPT might be okay, but I don't know. I mean, as I said, holography and entanglement entropy, as far as effective theory is concerned, are two different things. So you might have a CPT of some sort in the full theory, but not in the effective theory. The point is that in these stochastic models, you have, of course, stochastic fluctuations of the arrival time of photons, which depends on this fluctuation of space-time. So again, these stochastic effects could show up when you're looking at photon arrivals from astrophysical sources, provided you disentangle the source. Now, in the remaining half an hour, I think the talk is an hour, in the remaining half an hour, I would like now to concentrate on this omega effect on entangled states, describe what it is, what you are looking for, and also discuss the model, which one model, which could predict this. So to recapitulate here, if you have a decoherence, i.e. evolution of pure states in the effective theory to mixed ones, CPT may be not well defined as a quantum mechanical operator. It doesn't mean that it doesn't commute with the Hamiltonian, it's worse. But it is perturbatively not well defined. In other words, the concept of a particle, of course, is still makes sense, because otherwise what you are doing is nonsense. So in other words, as we shall see, it is like you have a Hamiltonian term somewhere or something else, which acts as a perturbation, which simply modifies the property of your antiparticle. And we shall see now what's happening. For the quantum meson phenomenology, there are two things. I won't discuss here the single state, because that I'm sure it will be discussed by John Ellis or other people. And essentially this concerns, it's an old, relatively old idea, concerns an evolution of the density matrix of, let's say, the kern, which undergoes this transition between K and K0 bar due to quantum gravity. And there is an environment which you parameterize by certain properties of the kern physics, and you can impose some limits. I will only, this is the note of the interest here, but I just want you to, so essentially what you do is you look at certain asymmetries for the kern decays, and of course if you have this decoherence, it affects the peak. And C.P. Lear put some limits of this alpha, beta, and gamma parameters, which are close to the Planck, but not as, so this is the Planck, but again, that depends on the model. I mean, what is the order of the alpha, beta, gamma in terms of the Planck scale? I mean, that depends on a specific model. So to me, fine. All it means is that there is exciting work in the experiment itself to improve sensitivity, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't see anything at 10 to the minus 19 GeV, because it could simply mean that these parameters, alpha, beta, gamma, are quadratic in the Planck scale, or cubic, or exponential, in that matter. So you have to be very careful here. But these are the latest numbers from Daphne experiments, and you see that this, for instance, exceeded the sensitivity more or less, if they improve the statistics, which Daphne will. But this doesn't mean that the coherence doesn't exist at Planck scale. It could be. It simply means that it could not be linearly suppressed by the Planck scale. Now I'm coming to the main effect of an ill-defined quantum mechanical operator, CPT operator, which distinguishes also from answers this question whether I can have weak CPT invariants or not. So this is, at the moment, this is an experimental test. You may forget about the theory. You know, somebody tells you if the CPT is ill-defined, one possible effect is this. It may not show up at all, but it may show up in this respect, and that's unique. That's the only value of this experiment, that if you see it, then you will know that it cannot be due to quantum mechanics. And this is because it's a counting experiment. I mean, you count how many anomalous contaminated states, as you will see, you have in the background. So you don't count any energy dependence, you don't look at any modified dispersal relations to depend on, of course, it depends on the model, but for the value, but it's a counting experiment. So if you see one of these bad states, then you will know that it cannot be due to quantum mechanics. So what it is, this effect, we developed it, by the way, in collaboration with Bernard Baker, Vasiliu, and other people. First of all, what are EPR correlated states? You have a meson here, it's produced, let's say, at rest, if it is a phi meson, or boosted, if it is the y, the epsilon state, and it decays. And the phi meson decays to k and k0 bar, or the epsilon state decays to b and b bar. K0 and k0 bar decay at times t1, where these are the measure times of the decay, and this vary because it depends when you're making the measurement, that's why it's EPR. So suppose that you're making a measurement here at t2, and you find some states there, then you could infer that what are the states there without making any measurement. That's why they call it EPR, but this doesn't mean anything with quantum mechanics. Nothing is transformed from here to here. It's just you infer it because you know theoretically what the assumptions of your theory is. And CPT, as a well-defined operator, is one of the basic assumptions. Not CPT invariance. CPT as a well-defined operator, but it may not commute with a Hamiltonian. So this assumption to get EPR correlations in the standard way, the assumption of CPT invariance is not put in. So what's happening is, essentially, the physics behind this phenomenon, let's concentrate on the case of counts for simplicity, means that ignoring weak interactions, strangeness, K0 and K0 bar are treated as identical particles. K0 bar is the antiparticle of K0, but as far as strangeness, weak interactions are concerned, these are identical particles. And because they are identical particles, the states of two quantum mechanical states of two identical bosons should be antisymmetric, because you have the permutation symmetry odd, and under charge conjugation should be odd. So for the angular momentum state one, it should be antisymmetric. And this, if you express the case in terms of the mass eigenstates, not the CP eigenstates, which are defined like this, and K plus is always K0 plus epsilon, K0 bar, or K0 minus epsilon, K0 bar. If you express the state in terms of mass eigenstates, K short and K long, which are short-lived and long-lived kaons, which have been observed in the experiment, then you arrive that always, if irrespective of CPT invariance, but provided the CPT is well-defined as an operator, you have these two states. So on the left and on the right hand side of the detector, you should see pairs, K short, K long, and K long, K short. And that was thought that it is independent of CPT, and indeed it is. If CPT is, even if it is violated, but simply does not commute with a Hamiltonian, that's what you always see. And that's what is called EPR correlation. However, if it is ill-defined, and I will describe in a moment the model which does this, then you can get a contamination with states K short, and K long. So this is the important point. With the omega parameter, which is complex in general, which would depend on the details of your model. In fact, you can get this sort of states by looking at backgrounds, production of two photons and then decay, but you can disentangle this from the backgrounds in the sense that if this is the interference of the genuine effect, this is the interference, this is versus energy, this is the interference of the background effect, so you can disentangle by the way they interfere not the same plus, which is the background here, the conventional physics background interferes with our background from quantum gravity. In fact, the problem of quantum gravity is that because these terms, if they are KL, KS, and KS, KS, the contaminated term KS, KS, depend on the energy of the resonance, because they both come from the same phi particle. The others do not depend. If you come from the background, they don't depend from the energy of the phi particle. So you're not. That's the idea of this contamination. So this is the phenomenon, and this is what you're looking for. And of course, experimentally, I mean, I will not bother you with details of what you're looking for. What you do is you look at these decay amplitudes to Ks and Kl states. You integrate them up to infinity over all times by keeping the distance of observation of the left and on the right-hand side fixed. That is up to you, because this T1 and T2 are the times that you observe the decays. And this, you form these asymmetries, and essentially, if there are omega effects, you get them here, you get them quadratic here, and this is the amplitude of the pi plus pi minus. And notice that because all these effects are divided by the pi plus pi minus, for the case of kaon, this has the value of 10 to the minus 3, is the decay amplitude to pi plus and pi minus, identical final states on left and right, and that enhances the phenomenon, because whatever the order of this omega is, you get an enhancement factor by 3 orders of magnitude. So that's a peculiarity of the kaon system as an amplifier. It's a nice thing. The main reason behind this, as we will see later on, is the fact that the kaons are degenerate states, almost degenerate, with a very small mass difference. Ms minus ml is 10 to the minus 15 GeV. So remember, in your first year of quantum mechanics, when you look at perturbation theory, the Dress state is the interaction of the Hamiltonian divided by the difference of the energy levels, E1 minus E2. So when the difference of the energy levels is very small, you amplify the perturbation, and that's what you do. And you get these are the asymmetries, and the characteristic thing is that if you have the omega effect, when you extrapolate, this is delta T and this is the asymmetry, at zero it doesn't vanish, and by looking at this you get precisely the effect. You can do the same thing with the B systems. The B systems have bigger statistics, but you can do essentially the same, so I won't discuss this. You can also look, but these are the experimental values more or less. The real part of omega you see at the moment, the accuracy is at this level. So, of course, it tells you nothing, because the omega could be close to zero and positive, and of course that shows what, however, the accuracy of these experiments are at the moment. Now, let me finish with the remaining 20 minutes with the model, because if I don't describe you a model, so far I only described you a generic experiment. I didn't tell you what the order of magnitude of the omega is. I only tell you what the experiment at the moment gives as limits. The model that gives this is defined on this model of foam that I was telling you. Now, what it is? Okay, it's more complicated than this picture, but it consists of, you start from a critical string, it lives in 10 dimensions, it has 8 brains, which acts as reflecting mirrors. And therefore, you restrict in this way the distance of the bulk action, of the bulk dimension. So you put the mirrors, and this is essentially a compactification for the bulk dimension through Orient defaults, people have called. Never mind. It's like a Casimir problem. What you do is you have 8 brains, and this is simply because you want to have supersymmetry. And you have a number of brains as your walls, which are dictated by supersymmetry. So you need VAC to manage. You can prove that if you have brains, you can have all sorts of defects here, but you can take the simplest one, D particle, 0 brain defect, and then for some reasons you allow one of the brains to move, then you break supersymmetry, because a moving brain breaks the target space supersymmetry. So the model is consistent as a vacuum if nothing moves, with an arbitrary number of D particles, and that is important. Because, which means that according to string theory philosophy, first quantized string theory philosophy, these are allowed vacua. That is the main problem of string theory, the uniqueness of the vacuum, but that I don't want to touch upon in this lecture. Why you choose this vacuum, okay? I mean, why should we be there? To me, we are lacking a fundamental principle if the theory is correct to this, but doesn't matter. At the moment, this is a consistent conformative theory, supersymmetry. If one brain moves, In string theory, you know that ordinary matter is only confined on the brain. Only gravitational degrees of freedom are allowed to move in the bulk. And then the D particles crush the brain, or themselves they can move. And then you have interactions of matter of both open or closed strings, because you may have a heterotic string in which the photon, for instance, is not an open string, but a closed, but the compactification comes from the Leech lattice or whatever. An interaction like this, these are the basic assumptions of the model. It's not in generally allowed, it's in generally allowed in string theory. And we have a conformal field theory, description of the capture. Carefully, it's not a necessary thing to have it. You may avoid it. People may say, fine, I don't have this capture. And you only need extended object to have this capture. So that's the assumption number one. My assumption is that you have a closed string which splits into two open strings once it hits a defect. Essentially, what you have is that the world sheet is torn apart by the defect. The question is, how am I going to make sure that this is a consistent theory? By proving that there exists a logarithmic world sheet conformity theory, which makes this an acceptable background. That is the standard practice in first quantized string theory. So I need to look for a world sheet conformity theory. As you will see naively, this is not a standard conformity theory. It's a non-equilibrium process if I tear the world sheet apart. And that's where the non-critical string comes in. That's why the non-equilibrium situation expressed by the non-critical strings of the foam comes in. So my point is that if your foam is a purely equilibrium situation, then you won't see this effect. But if it is not, and non-critical strings are a consistent mathematical theory of non-equilibrium processes, then you will see it. So, of course, I don't have the time to describe, so don't be alarmed by this. All I want to describe is that usually in string theory, in first quantized string theory, you have a world sheet action. That's your sigma model, that could be your conformal action, and then you essentially modify your background by deformations. And this, in the case of the tearing apart, if you like, of this capture process that I described earlier, this stage is described by this operator. There is a theta function which describes the impulse. And you see already the Lorentz violation thing as far as an experiment is concerned. It's a given time. You can express it covariantly but by making a generic transformation, but that gives you a violation in the direction which goes along the recoil of the defect afterwards, okay? So this is already one ingredient that you could expect CPT, the Lorentz, local Lorentz violation, as a result of the defect. This is a logarithmic algebra. It doesn't matter. It closes. I don't want you to pay attention. The only thing I want you to pay attention is this factor here, which makes these operators not well-defined. Careful. This epsilon is the regulator to define the theta function as a quantum mechanical operator on the world sheet. And this is a negative anomalous dimension, which means precisely that as a conformal process, this is not true. The string is non-critical, it needs Liouville dressing. It needs to expand the target space dimension by a Liouville field so as to restore conformal symmetry. The other important point is that to close the logarithmic algebra, this epsilon is not taken to zero independently of the world sheet, but it is the world sheet itself. So, and moreover, I'm going a bit fast here because that is not what I want you to pay attention, but here I want you to pay attention. Once I take this epsilon, which is the regulator, which is the inverse of the scale of the string, of the world sheet scale, and I perform a finite size scaling of the world sheet, I change it, then notice that this scale changes like the time, because the coordinates yi of the d particle change as you expect in a Galilean transformation for heavy d particles. So this is important because as a result of the conformal algebra of a string arising from representing this tearing apart of the world sheet as a special operator, I get that the change with the world sheet cutoff is equivalent to a time. And this is what is associated with the coherence. And this is why from the Walls theorem, I know that the CPT operator of whatever effective theory this thing is not well defined. Why is the coherence is a long story, and I don't want to do it. Roughly, you take a density matrix of some matter, which on the worksheet depends on the worksheet cutoff and on the backgrounds, of course, which could be the space-time backgrounds. You perform this transformation, which you view it as the time, and that is what you get. So you get these beta functions, which are the, if you like, they express the fact that the transformation is not conformal on the worksheet. Careful, log L of A is the scale on the worksheet, not on the target space. And this, of course, this is a metric of Zamolodchikov, which pertains to the vertex operator on the string. The important point is that for the recoil case, you know that this epsilon and this operator has a singularity, some technicalities. The important point is that you sum over worksheet topology, so you quantize these operators. And you arrive at the Lindblad by imposing that your effective theory should preserve positivity of probability, positivity, probability, conservation, and energy. And that is what is called the Lindblad. But then, because of the coherence, you have the CPT. So, roughly, this is the model. The basic assumption is that you tear a worksheet apart. If you do not have this assumption, then you will not have the phenomenon. Okay? You will have a standard recoil scattering. So, an important point of the Liouville dressing. The fact that the thing is not conformal requires Liouville dressing. And now I come to the second aspect of this phenomenon. Apart from the ill definition of the worksheet, you will see that it also modifies dispersion relations. But also, I want to describe the back reaction on the space-time, which will affect the Hamiltonian, which will dress the quantum mechanical states, and will lead me to the omega effect. So that's the logic here. So Liouville dressing, I want to tell you stuff. I will only tell you that, of course, if you have a non-critical string, you are not on a fixed point on the worksheet. You are moving from one to another. It's a non-equilibrium relaxation situation, and space-time foam may be one of those. You may not have reached yet a fixed point, so that is an alternative to landscape. By the way, if you have non-critical string, you may solve your problem of uniqueness of the vacuum, because not all of the vacuum are necessarily connected by renormalization group trajectories. So, of course, you have improvement that only one is connected. But think of it philosophically. You may not have one vacuum universe. Eh? There may be an isolated fixed point which is not connected with yours in that sense, which would be there, or many others, and that's fine. You just happen to be on the one that there is the formations connected. But I don't want, as I said, to offer any explanation here. The Liouville dressing is this. You add an extra field on the worksheet so as to restore conformal invariance. Okay? So if you have a conformal invariance here, you add an extra field on the worksheet, so you make the space of the string, the target space, d plus one dimensional, and depending on the modification of the central charge, you may have space-like or time-like situation. So this is the anomalous dimension. This is the Liouville dressing factor, which restores conformal symmetry. So the whole operator in this case is conformal. This is the central charge deficit, which in this particular case of recoil is bigger than one. So you estimate here the anomalous dimensions of that term following. This comes from the requirement that the entire anomalous dimension, which is the sum of this and this, is one, two. I mean, it's a marginal operator. And this, if you partially integrate this operator, you end up with an operator which has two dA dx x space, but on the worksheet, this thing corresponds to metrics. So immediately, by requiring conformal invariance, you ended up what is the effect of your tearing apart the worksheet on the target space-time, because you ended up with a worksheet that a deformation that has the form of that of a metric deformation. And the metric has one in the Liouville sector, one in the recoil direction, but an off-diagonal term like this. And this is the important point, because now this operator for positive x acquires this form. The Liouville field, in some sense, you can identify to lie in a constant surface. There are various models to do this. So dynamically, you leave in general in a D plus one dimensional space, but you may have hypersurfaces on this D plus one dimensional space, which get you back to the D dimensional space, and one of those are magnetized tori. I won't insist on that. I want you only to know that the Liouville and the space, the Liouville field may drag the time. Remember, the Liouville field is the zero mode of the Liouville field is the cutoff on the world sheet, so that is fine. And in this case, when you identify this exponential phi with this, you see that the exponentials go away, and that indeed you have a constant background off-diagonal metric, but it is of Finsler type. It depends on the momentum transfer, because U is the momentum transfer during the collision. It's the difference of momenta of the string state coming in, which represents matter, to the string states coming out. This could have modified dispersion relation induced by gravity, as I hope we will see later on. It has its own dynamics, so it has a vector field, which is the momentum transfer that breaks Lorentz. So it is like a Tevez, but in the sense of a vector theory. But it has locally a momentum dependence. Locally, you break Lorentz, but doesn't have global effects, because if you have a statistical distribution of the particles, no one tells you that the particles always will appear, you know, in a non-isotropic situation. You may have equally well possibility that the average, the statistical average of this D particle vanishes, which you could have if you have a random movement in of D particles, of course, in your space, and only correlations will appear. So this is what I was saying, even if you see a modified dispersion relation, you will only see it in correlators, you won't see it on average. And therefore it could be much more suppressed, because this is a function that depends only Now, in the next 5 minutes, I will finish with the omega effect and finish the talk. Now, what is the omega effect? The omega effect is that you have this, for this phenomenon to take place, you need an extended object, a closed string or an open one, which is captured by a D particle defect. So you need a defect in space-time, some higher dimension of space-time, and an extended object. So at the moment, I could only do it in string theory. Local theory don't exhibit this effect, because you don't have capture in local field theory. Now, you need the recoil of the defect so as to conserve momentum and energy. So these are sacred for you. You conserve momentum and energy. But then the recoil spoils locally Lorentz invariants. But this splitting of string from closed to two opens with each their ends attached to the D particle should conserve other symmetries, gauge symmetries. So you could not have it if you have a charged, electrically charged situation, because then the splitting will not conserve the electric charge. So it should not appear in electrons. And that saves the situation of that model from the Crab nebula. That is the other assumption. If, as I said, you don't have this splitting, then everything is fine and you have no problem. And that's what probably critical string theory will tell you. Well, fine. Well, you need non-critical string. However, if you have this splitting, and in order to know that this splitting is there by just proving that it is consistent with conformal invariance means nothing. You need the dynamics of the second quantization, but unfortunately this is not known. So you need to know what is the target space field theory effective action of string, whether it allows this splitting. At the moment, conformal invariance allows it, and that is my assumption. So if you have it, not all particles, only electrically neutral particles are good candidates for this phenomenon. You may have isotropy, so as not have in principle, visible, if you like, dispersion relations. So you have only fluctuations, and this is a free parameter at the moment. And you have, for neutral measures, you can consider two flavors. The metric that I talked before, essentially you consider Klein-Gordon, because I'm interested in kaons, in this curved metric, so this is still a Hamiltonian situation. But you change flavors, because flavor is another thing that upon the capture, it doesn't, is not conserved. It's like a Kalman-Rubikoff effect in a black hole. A baryon number minus a lepton number is not well defined. Flavor is not one of the charges that should be conserved. The reason is, it may be the re-emitted state may have a different phase, as I was saying here, may have a different phase from the incident one, because of course, you capture the string and you re-emit. The two open string states combine again to be re-emitted. That could have a phase difference, and usually what a flavor is a phase, is a Kobayashi-Nasukawa phase in front of the wave function. So flavor is not necessarily conserved. That's why you get, from this effect, you get, of course, the average is reflected here, and you assume, another third assumption is that the momentum transfer is somehow kind of represented as a momentum operator times a statistical variable suppressed with whatever the Planck scale is. In this particular case, it's the string scale divided by the string coupling. This gives you an interaction Hamiltonian due to the off-diagonal metric that this phenomenon has, like this. And remember, the average of the metric vanishes, but not its fluctuation. So when you consider target space, when the flavors here represent k short, k long, what you do is you dress the state by using this interaction Hamiltonian that I have described earlier. So this is a quantum mechanical problem now. You dress the state, and this is the two energy difference in quantum mechanics. This is not quantum gravity, but the only thing that you needed is not even quantum gravity, this model, carefully, it's classical in the deep particle space-time, okay? So you have defects. The real quantum point is when the string splits between, when the string of the splitting is what captures the, what you would call quantum gravity. The other is classically induced gravity. This is the Hamiltonian, this is standard quantum mechanics. You repeat the same analysis for the other state, and this is precisely the omega effect. You see, instead of having only KL, KS, when you have an entangled state of two mesons, the gravitationally dressed state as a result of this perturbation corresponds to KS, KS, and KL, KL, with coefficients that you could, these are determined by the interaction Hamiltonian. And indeed, this omega effect gives you this prediction. For instance, in this particular case, it depends on what the momentum transfer during the process is. This requires knowledge of the full theory. However, if you assume that this is between 1 and 10 to the minus 2, then of course you could have a sensitivity of this effect at Daphne. Notice that this effect is amplified because of the very small mass difference between the KL, KS states. So this is the particle amplification. So, yes. This is a momentum, remember, it should be P. You're right. It's the momentum of the particle, of the incident particle. So,
Lorentz covariant expressions. Is the four momentum square?
It's the free momentum. It's the free momentum square. It's not Lorentz, it's the UI. But remember, it's not a U0. That's the point. This is because, however, that's a very good point, which I will discuss later on. This arose because I only have done Galilean transformation assuming massive state. So that is another assumption. If you insist of covariance, for instance, in your theory that you have, probably you don't have this effect, or you have it in a different way. I would be very much interested in covariantizing this model. At the moment, it's a Galilean heavy defect, so you only see the UI. It's just the momentum, the spatial momentum, B actually is the momentum vector. And these are the present limit, 10 to the minus 5. So you will see here, if this is 10 to the minus 19 and this is an energy of a kaon, which is of order MeV, 100 MeV, then depending, you place limits on this and you place limits less than 10 to the minus 5 because the difference is 10 to the minus 15 GeV. So this amplifies the phenomenon. So this is what I finished. The omega effect is not generic. If you represent quantum gravity as a heat bath, then of course, a simple, as was done by Garay, a simple transformation predicts no omega effect. So, this is my conclusion. CPD and decoherence could lead to some unique signatures of this effect, which would affect the APR correlation. I presented a model which I discussed this, but of course, if you ask me whether this is a unique phenomenon, it is certainly not, but I hope I made clear certain things on this one. And I apologize, I took just 3 minutes.
Talk with a very high information density. Question?
A remark on this thing of the omega effect being smoking gun of some coherence phenomenon. In non-commutative spacetime models, you assume that Lorentz symmetry is perfect. Right. No, it doesn't follow, in fact. I mean that it's well known by now that actually you have some sort of deformed concept of Lorentz invariance in non-commutative space-time models.
It depends.
Huh?
It depends. What do you mean? It depends on the model.
It's not that you lose completely the concept of Lorentz symmetry, you just have like some sort of like deformed concept of Lorentz symmetry.
Fine.
Okay. And the nice thing about this, what we call quantum deformed algebras, is that they could eventually lead to some sort of like deviations from standard Bose statistics. Which you actually use.
That's very interesting. Then, if the Bose statistics is violated, then I would be.
That's the ingredient that you use in the device.
So you say that, but did you check that the CPP operator is not well defined?
It should be.
As I said, smoking gun.
No.
In the sense of things that I could understand.
The framework of deformed algebra, in principle, you should be able to define a CPP operator, which does not commute with the Hamiltonian, as you showed. But at the same time, then you have.
If the Bose statistic is violated, then of course you don't have this minus sign in the identity of particles. That would be very interesting in seeing that. That's a very good. So then you could say you could have a phenomenon over there as well.
Let's see. So if you take non-critical string theory and then you add the regressing, then essentially you get critical string theory.
In one-dimensional
graph. Yeah. So why do you need to phrase this in terms of non-critical string?
Because of the coherence. You see, that's a good point. I wouldn't, if it would be only critical in D plus one dimension, then, you would have, one of the effects is you have a metric, but that says nothing about CPP violation, You could just have a critical string in D plus one dimensions in but when you project down to D, it would be in a Fischer type job. So that wouldn't necessarily mean a CPP. However, this is, in fact, this is a good point. This is what they say, basic assumption. What I did, which may be wrong. It's to identify the worksheet cutoff with the target time. Once you do this, then a D plus one dimensional string is not clear. The D dimensional string has a non-vanishing beta function, and then you have the decoherence. It is this assumption that prompts me to.
But the follow-up question: what is the dimensionality of the picture that you do on the blackboard?
This one.
Yeah. Okay.
For the model, yes, but then I come back to find magnetized for I the play.
But 10 dimensions before or after you add the deal with addressing.
This is 10, it's 10, it's 8, and it's 11 dimensions after the, with two times. Because it's two times. It's time-like, really. So you have 10 dimensions.
So you have two independent times.
You have two independent times, which, however, as I said, I restrict.
You don't want to identify them, so they will be two different.
In general, they are not, but then you have instabilities because of the masses of your theories go away. So this is why I identify here. If you have this, I didn't have the time, unfortunately, to discuss this, but since I was asked, can I go ahead back for answering? If you quantify magnetized ORI to go from the 8 range to 4, then the magnetic field, as a result of this tearing apart of the worksheet, will also be changing by terms like this. So you would have stability. You see, stability would mean time independence. The mass square should not depend on the time. Otherwise, the theory is unstable. There is only one hypersurface, this D plus one dimensional molecule, which is a D dimensional hypersurface, which. So this is the point. Then I could not claim that this is a rigorous proof because you don't have the target space theory to prove that the effective potential of the theory is minimized there. But essentially, that's what I identified.
Really, what
you're
saying is that there's a string theory in 11 dimensional space time.
With two times. It is similar, and I'm working on this it could be, you could impose the one on Butz, who has Jacques Butz, who has this theory of with two times and then by Gates transformation he identified.
But then, I mean, you start with a time which is sort of the ordinary string theory time, and then you have another one which you have to be coherence.
Yeah, which is like a finite. Yeah, I agree. Now, what is the physics of this? It's like a finite. Good. Thank you. It's like a real time temperature, finite temperature field theory, because you have the effects which introduce this UV field, which is essentially a collective effective description of the environment, which is like a temperature in a real-time finite temperature field theory. So you have a real-time finite temperature field theory, you have a Euclidean time and a time. And in fact, one of my times for convergence, the conventional time for convergence of world super integral should be Euclidean in this form, this market. I don't have the time. Yeah, you see, one of the times, it's 1 and minus 1, minus 1 in my signature is Euclidean. So it is like a real-time finite temperature which expresses the effect of the coherence. And eventually the temperature depends on time and you are back on one surface.
But you're not worried about the fact
that you're... Oh, I do worry. I do worry a lot. But what I say I stated only what my assumptions are. Of course. I mean, because I don't know whether this procedure of minimization is consistent in the full theory, what happened with quantum effects. Huh?
Can you go to number 48?
That is an attendance which is commendable.
I was wondering about the observability of the effect. And
yes.
I think I now, then I made a mistake, it's 49. Okay.
This one. When you're looking at the assistant.
And I was fine. Okay. I see that one of your effects, for example, the I2 effect, could be put together with the I1 effect simply by renormalizing.
Sure.
By renormalizing, but we mean eta plus minus.
The correct.
Right?
The decay amplitude of
factor. Yeah. Actually, I think there is an error in I1. Okay. So the whole observability of your effect depends on the Lorentz. On the Lorentz non-invariance.
Yes, yes.
It's only because omega depends on
the direction,
the velocity of your kaons with respect to the lap that this thing would be observable. So if you try to covariantize this thing, if you make it Lorentz invariance,
most likely will the effect will
have anything.
I don't know, but I suspect so, because which I stress, in fact, here. I stress it here. Here. You need locally. Okay, statistically, maybe this effect will be washed out if you have statistical population of effects. But the correlations would remain. So you need non-covariant, you need UI to that's what I call smoking gun of certain types. So if you observe something, then most likely you would know. Probably your experiment is wrong, so you have to repeat it again.
You should be able to get very, very strong bounds on this kind of effect, because you know eta plus minus was measured at low energies and at very high energies. So
the bounds, the real and imaginary part, 10 to the minus 5, are the bounds that you could get from if the k, if you see. The bounds are gotten only for kaons, because they are 100 MeV. If you have much faster particles, then, of course, you get much larger bounds. Unfortunately, you don't have entangled stage of neutrinos, because then you would get extremely... If you had, okay, you have a Z0, decay into two neutrinos. And then, of course, if the neutrino is Majorana, then the particle of the neutrino should be identified with the neutrino. So this effect relies on the indistinguishability, on the breaking of the indistinguishability between particle and antiparticle. But it's not clear whether the role of helicity there that distinguishes this is... So this is what I'm looking for, and also the covariant fix, whether this was subject.
Okay, thanks. So.